We're going to start this morning the very same place we left off this past Wednesday night in our study of parables. Be open in your Bibles to Luke 14. Luke chapter 14. This past week we studied about the parable of the Great Supper. And there was one verse in there that we kind of flew over so that we would come back and look more at that this morning. We're going to do that today. Luke chapter 14. Remember the setting, Jesus was in a man's home. And he began to teach to those who had been invited some applications. He then began to talk to the host. And then he made the parable about that great supper, the necessity of accepting the invitations, being faithful to that invitation. And in verse 12 is what we want to pick up. That's what we mentioned this past Wednesday night very, very briefly. Let's get a little bit more details about that. When you make a dinner or a supper, call not your friends or your brethren or your kinsmen nor your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you again and repay you. But when you make a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Does this say then that should you ever invite over a friend that you have done wrong? It sounded pretty clear, huh? Verse 12, when you make a dinner, don't call your friends. Don't call your brethren. Don't call your kinsmen or your rich neighbor. That's pretty limiting, right? Don't invite these people. Verse 13, when you make a feast, you invite the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind. Do we have here a prohibition? Is this an end-all be-all of who can come to your home? The answer to that is no. And we're going to look at that concept today. And the way we know that this is not an absolute prohibition is because of what Jesus himself did at various times. He accepted an invitation to Mary and Martha's home, Lazarus' home. Who were they? They were very, very dear friends. And when Mary and Martha and Lazarus, when they invited him into their home, he didn't say, now Martha, I'm not lame. I'm not blind. Don't invite me into your home. No, had it been wrong, he wouldn't have had accepted the invitation. He wouldn't have been there. Jesus didn't violate law, you know that. So what have we got here then? Because he was not these things, but yet he accepted invitations to people's homes. There's an interesting relationship in various verses, and we're going to look at several of them today. And the relationship is a not-but relationship. And when you see those together many times, it's not a prohibition. What you've got is a matter of emphasis. So here's the phrase we're going to look for all throughout the morning. Verse 12. When you make a dinner or a supper, call not, there's the first part of the phrase, call not, and now look in verse 13, but when you make a feast. Start looking today at the verses that we're going to flip through. Look for that phrase, not and but. And many times when they are found together, what you've got is an emphasis. What you've got is a matter of priority. And what Jesus was saying to this host here, he was saying, now when you invite people in, don't do it because you're looking for payback. Don't invite your rich friends, your rich neighbors. Don't invite your brethren. Don't do it because your goal is to get invited back to their home and you get something out of it. Verse 13, there is a higher reward coming. When you do something good for those who can never pay you back, verse 14, you will be blessed because they can't repay you, but you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. What Jesus was saying to those hosts is, there is a greater reward than social things. There is a greater reward to be found than having somebody pay you back. There is a reward from the Father. He was speaking about priorities, about why we do what we do. And there was a not but to emphasize it. Now what I want us to do, we're just going to look through various verses and look for these emphasis. Look for these priorities. And it's interesting. The very same things that Jesus was making a matter of priority 2,000 years ago, how shocking would it be to you to think it's some of the very same things that you and I can get our priorities askew of? The very same things Jesus was making a matter of emphasis, then there's still problems today. Let's go to the Sermon on the Mount. First one, we'll look at Matthew chapter 6. We're looking at some New Testament principles, not in any form of order of significance. We're just going to start in Matthew 6 and do them in chronology. And meaning as they just come in the order of the text. Matthew chapter 6. One of the more familiar ones that I think we'll look at today. In the midst of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus makes this statement, verse 19. And you're very familiar with it. But look for the phrases, remember. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust corrupts, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust does not consume, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And someone says, well, okay, verse 19, that means I'm supposed to be a nomad because I can't save anything. I can't have any possessions other than the clothes I'm wearing on my back because Jesus said, don't lay up treasures for yourself. Is this a prohibition? Well, we know better than that. Because of other things Jesus taught. Do you remember the parable of the talent? When he came to the one talent man, he said, buddy, at the very least, you could have just put it in the bank. You could have just laid it up and it would have at least drawn interest. These other men went out and worked. These other men went out and did something. You could have at least, at the very minimum, at least just put it in the bank and let it get interest. At least it would have done something. And yet here, he's saying, don't lay up treasures. So is the master teacher, is he contradicting himself in these two settings? No. When you see the relationship issue, the not and the but, it's not a prohibition. He's not prohibiting, verse 19, for you to lay up some treasures on earth. What he is emphasizing, verse 20, is there are more important treasures we'd better be storing. He's talking about a matter of emphasis. A heavenly treasure, verse 20, that does not disappoint. Verse 19, do not lay up treasures in earth where moth and rust corrupts and where thieves break in and steal. We have all had treasures on the earth that got misplaced. We have all had treasures on the earth that stopped working. We have all had these earthly physical treasures that turned into junk. That we sold in yard sales or just put into the trash. You save things that are of eternal nature and of an endless nature. Verse 19 is not talking about prudence. It's not saying, no, don't be prudent. Verse 19 is also not saying, well, just be careless with your things. What he's saying is do not put your trust in corruptible things. And in verse 21, he gets to the very meat of it. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be. And now we find out the core of what's behind our treasures. What means the most to us, what has most value in our life, the key is our heart. Are we starting to see the connection now? When there's a not in the but, there is an emphasis being made. There's a priority at stake. Now here's the question. This was 2,000 years ago. Is it possible today that me and you can get this reversed again? Hour after hour, week after week, month, year after year, we just toil and toil and toil, and it's about building bigger numbers, more zeros at the end of it. It's about collecting more stuff that we can put in the garage and that we can put in the shelf and we can put behind lights that shine on them. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Emphasis. How am I doing? How are you doing on putting emphasis on the right treasure? It's what he's telling us. It's what he's teaching us. Turn over a chapter or two to chapter 10. Just a few pages. Matthew chapter 10 is Jesus sending the disciples out on what we call that limited commission. And he was very, very clear about what they were going to face. You're going to be arrested. Not everybody's going to receive your message. You're going to be taken before magistrates. You're going to be taken before judges. You're going to be thrown in jail. You're going to be beaten. Verse 28. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Okay, I can step out in front of a car now, right? Because I don't have to fear people that can just kill the body. Is that what that's saying? It'll be foolishness. And Jesus is not teaching foolishness. What he is emphasizing, this is a matter of emphasis, right? What he is emphasizing is that the body and the soul are distinct and separate. And there are people who can harm one and they can't touch the other. And yet God is one who can do both. Hebrews 11 mentions very briefly it's an inference, but in Hebrews 11 it talks about at the end of the chapter, those who refused to be saved from their death. Those who would not bow, those who would not compromise, said that they did not take the way of escape, and they took death. And the inference being made is that the body was slain and the soul intact. Soul escapes that. And that's what Jesus is teaching to the disciples as they're about to go off on this mission, knowing full well there's going to be some bad things happen. Do not fear those who can only harm the body, but instead, you have a reverent fear of one who can destroy both. We studied a couple of weeks ago. Time's gotten away. I can't remember when it was. But we were talking about stands we're going to have to make because of government rules that have been passed very recently. And we looked at Acts chapter 5. We ought to obey God rather than men. And when laws are going to be further passed, that's going to put us in direct conflict with federal government. And yet we continue to teach things. This is the emphasis. The emphasis is that man can do things to us. They did it to the apostles. That's what Jesus was telling them on the limited commission. Man can do things to us. Governments can do things to us. But what they cannot do is condemn the soul. There is one who can do both. And Jesus is speaking of emphasis. 2,000 years later, can we mix this up? Is it still a problem that we'll bow down, that we'll step into a corner, we'll refuse to speak, we'll refuse to stand when laws are passed or any application we can make on that? Fear of man prevents us from doing what God requires. Jesus, a long time before these laws got passed, was saying there is one whom we should have reverent fear for. It's not a prohibition. It's a matter of emphasis. And how am I doing? How are you doing? Turn to John chapter 6. Familiar text. John 6 is after the feeding of the multitudes. And if you remember, after Jesus had fed the 5,000 men plus the women and children with basically a sack lunch. The next morning, bright and early, they are right back in his face again. And Jesus just calls them on it. In verse 26, he says, you didn't seek me because you saw miracles, but because you ate the loaves and were filled. He said, you're not here for anything of significance. You're not here for any teachings. You're here because you want your bellies filled again. Verse 27. Labor not for meat which perishes, but for the meat which endures unto everlasting life. And someone looks at that and says, see there, I don't have to work. I don't have to sweat. I don't have to work for what I get. As a matter of fact, I'll go join a monastery because Jesus said not to work for your food. So you've got one group saying, see, I don't have to do it. You've got another group saying, oh, in Ephesians chapter 4, the teaching was, let him that steal no more, but work with his hands. And now they'll say, well, see, then we got a contradiction. Here the Bible says don't work for your food. Here it says we're supposed to work for our food. You can't trust it. You can't. It's just nonsense. Verse 26 is a matter of emphasis. It's not a prohibition. It's a not but relationship. and it fits in with these others that we've looked at. The emphasis that Jesus is making, the priority that he's making, is that everything you and I have, with the exception of our soul, verse 27, it will perish. Let me repeat that. Everything you and I have or ever will have, with the exception of our soul, will perish. And the conclusion from that, the hints of that is that none of them then should have primary interest. The one that is eternal and ageless is the one that should. And how are we doing on this one? Labor not for the meat which perishes. Let that meat be just kind of, let's expand that just a moment. He mentioned meat because they were there for food. But let's just make applications to ourselves. Labor not for the car that perishes. Labor not for the home that perishes. Labor not for the jewelry that perishes. Labor not for the fill in your blank. Because we can do a lot of laboring for a lot of blanks that are going to perish. It's not a prohibition. 1 Timothy chapter 6 says we have been blessed monetarily. God wants us to enjoy what he's given us. And he's made us stewards of them. This is not a prohibition. And we understand that. But the problem is we don't take the next step. We're happy to say, now this is not a prohibition. I can still work for stuff. It's a matter of emphasis. What are we spending most of our time on? Where is most of our labor put? And it's interesting. For another lesson, we could connect John chapter 6 back to the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed is he who hungers and thirsts for righteousness. Let that settle in with verse 27. Labor not for the meat which perishes, but for the meat that endures unto everlasting life. And Jesus, I'm about to start talking about him being the bread of life. He says there are better meats out there. There are better breads out there. There are ageless and eternal things we could be laboring for. 2,000 years later, does it surprise us that what Jesus made a matter of emphasis then is still a matter of emphasis that we struggle with now? All of us at times have put things that perish above things that are eternal. We'd be dishonest if we try to brush that off. We have all been guilty of that. The question is, are we still going to remain guilty of it after being reminded of the emphasis Jesus gives it? There are eternal things, and they're more significant, and that's the point. He was wanting that group of people to see that day. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Let's move into from the Gospels, move to the Epistles. And again, very, very similar passages, very similar teachings. 2 Corinthians 4. Building right on the principle that we just studied. Labor not for the meat that perishes, but for the meat that leads to eternal life. All right. Well, let's pick back up. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Start with me in verse 17. Our light affliction. And this, let's just pause for just a moment. There are people going through things right now. People in this auditorium dealing with health. People in this auditorium dealing with family issues, some known, some unknown. And in the moment, those afflictions do not seem very light at all. They turn our world upside down. Paul's trying to get the bigger picture out there. Our light affliction is but for a moment. It works a far more exceeding and great eternal weight of glory while we look not at the things that are seen. We look not at the things that are seen, but at the things that are not seen. And someone reads that and sees a prohibition, and they say, well, what am I supposed to put my eyes out? Am I supposed to blind myself? It says not to look at any seen things. That's not prohibitive. This is a matter of emphasis, and we're trying to show all the different verses where that's true. This is not a contradiction. Jesus is not talking nonsense. This is not the Spirit just saying something ridiculous. Of course we see things with our eyes. We see these created things. It's a matter of emphasis. What are we going to focus on? What are we going to set our gaze on and just stare it down till we go cross-eyed? What are we going to look at and re-look at and look at again and just stare down? Make sure we talk about the same thing. The seen things. Drop back down into verse 18. I stopped reading. While we look not at the things that are seen, but the things that are not seen. For the things that are seen are temporal. Talking about these earthly things, the very things we've been looking at the last couple points. Labor not for the meat that perishes. That's a seen thing. That's not where the focus is. Lay not treasures for yourself on earth where they will become moth eaten and rust filled and stolen. That's a temporal thing. Those are treasures that can be seen and they are not to be the focus. It's not where the attention is supposed to be. But the things that are not seen are eternal. And we make the comparison of that emphasis. There are things that are not to be our objective because they will pass away. They will come to an end. But yet there is a spiritual world that belongs to God, eternal in ages. Just to kind of pull some various applications. Think about the beauty of gold, silver, diamonds, jewels, the things we see. And to the spiritually minded person, how does that stand in contrast to grace? It's unseen. But to the spiritually minded, infinitely more beautiful. Think about the seen things of homes and cars that can be so nice and so comfortable. But to the spiritually minded person, how does that stack up next to forgiveness? It's an unseen thing. Think about some of the creation. The Grand Canyon. The coastlines. The oceans. The mountains. The sky caps. And think about it. How does that compare to the spiritually minded person? How does that compare to the throne scene from Revelation 4 and 5? God sitting in His throne, Christ on the right hand, and here are these created heavenly beings for eternity, screaming glory and glory and glory and taking their crowns off and throwing it. And then at the end of Revelation chapter 5, we find out that we can be a part of that. There are unseen things, treasures in heaven, meat that doesn't perish, and they are to be the emphasis. And that's what all these points are building to. Let me give you one more. 1 Peter chapter 3. A very, very clear one. Maybe the most clear as far as letting us know it obviously isn't talking about a prohibition. 1 Peter chapter 3 is obviously not a prohibition. And we understand that. And we're going to understand it very clearly. But it's still the concept of this not-but relationship. The idea of priorities and of emphasis. Start with me in verse 1. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Likewise, and remember the context. We put the chapter breaks in. That likewise is, it's talking about relationships that we have with each other. Slave to master, fathers and sons, and so on. Likewise. You wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, and if they not obey the word, that they might without a word be won by your life, your behavior. So it's not about nagging. It's set a proper example. Live properly in front of them. That might be the catch, he says. Verse 2. And then he begins to talk about that behavior. While they behold your chaste behavior coupled with fear, who's adorning? Let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of hair, of wearing of gold, of putting on of apparel, but the hidden man of the heart, that which is not corruptible, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God great price. Verse 3 lets us see very clearly this not but relationship not being prohibited. Because if verse 3 was a prohibition, make sure you see what's there. Let it not be the plaiting of the hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of apparel. If this was a prohibition, it'd be a very scary sight, wouldn't it? This is not prohibiting clothing. We know that Jesus is not contradicting all the teachings about modesty. This is not a prohibition. It's a matter of emphasis. He's talking about character that can get someone's attention. He's talking about character that the very life itself lets people see that there is something different about them. And then he goes on to get specific with it. He said it's not a character who everything, it all wraps up about outward perishing stuff. It's not about what you do with the hair. That's not what's going to convert. It's not about what you do with your jewelry. That's not going to get attention. Not if you're trying to save a soul. It's not about the clothes you put on and how fancy and purple they may have been. Verse 4, but here's the emphasis. Here's the priority. It's not all that outer stuff. It's the hidden man of the heart. We're back to the unseen things, aren't we? The hidden man of the heart, which is not corruptible. Does that take us back to earlier? Lay not up for yourself treasures that perish. Our outer body is going to perish too. It's not the corruptible. It's the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God. Don't miss that. All that stuff in verse 3, who was that in the sight of? Fixing of the hair, wearing of the ornaments, wearing of the stuff, putting on the fan. Who's that for? Whose sight is that for? We know who's that for. It's for somebody else. And then in verse 4, it said, but that's not the priority. There is someone else who's watching. And in verse 4, it says, in the sight of God, it's this inner man that's beauty. It's the inner man that gets his attention. The emphasis that's being made is, how do we appear before God? Because He looks right through the hair. He looks right through the gold. He looks right through the clothes. He's going to look right through the Botox. He's going to look right through implants. He's going to look right through it all. And He will look to our spirit. That's what's valuable in His sight. And how surprising is it that 2,000 years later, we can still get that messed up? We can still, all of these things. We're laboring for the wrong things. We've got our eyes on the wrong things. We're storing up treasure of the wrong things. Our priorities still can miss every bit of this. There are others. I could just put an et cetera down there. But you got to have some homework, right? Go find some more. And just in passing, as you're just doing daily readings, look for some of those not and buts, because there's a lot more of them. Just to throw one out real quickly, in 1 Corinthians 1, when Paul was rebuking them for their clanism, the fact that they kind of divided themselves up under Peter and so on, Paul said, "I'm glad. I didn't come not. I came not to baptize, but to preach." Had somebody actually tell me that. One time they used that and they said, see there, baptism's not essential. Paul even said he didn't come to baptize. I have come not to baptize, but to preach. It's the not but situation. It was a matter of priorities. There was a lot of people in Corinth who could have done some baptizing. You know how many was in Corinth who had the gifts of an apostle? One. Matter of emphasis. There was only one there who could do some of the things Paul was doing. It's a matter of priority and emphasis. It wasn't a prohibition of baptism. But there's one more for you. You go find some others, because they're there. And there are examples of where there are emphasis that God makes. Now here's the invitation. Jesus spent so much time. The Spirit spent so much time showing us matters of emphasis. I wonder why. Number one, it's important. Number two, knew we had problems with it. And it's just amazing that some of the very things that was an emphasis issue then are still emphasis issues now. And we need to wake up and we need to be working for meat that doesn't perish. We need to be saving up treasures that can't be stolen. We need to be working on the inner man that in God's sight is beautiful. And not in but. Where are we fitting in to that? Get your songbooks out. How's our emphasis? Where are our priorities? And exactly how serious do we need to get about making some correction? For working for the wrong meat. For saving up the wrong treasures. If our emphasis is on the wrong line of vision, staring and focusing on the wrong issue, where are we? Before we go any farther into our service, we want to give you a chance to make this right. If we need to refocus our priorities, it can happen at your seat. But it might be such an issue you want some help. And you want brethren praying for you and holding you accountable and assisting. So we're going to do that while we sing the first verse of the number Doyle chose.